Thanks, David. It's 720 WGN Extension 720. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Well, we talked about this in the beginning of the show, that we talked about the airline industry and the state of air travel. And very interesting stories this week. The European Union, of course, the tariffs that have been slapped on the European Union include some of the things we've been talking about, you know, French wine and cheese and, of course, single malt liquor, which Roe was upset about. But one thing that people didn't recognize, it also includes airline parts and things of that nature, and that's going to have an impact, and it already has, on the stock of many American airlines. David Shaper is here. He's a longtime reporter on the airline industry for NPR and the Chicago Bureau right here, and an old colleague. I mean, David, I remember we used to work together. Yeah. You covered education. We could just talk about the strike stuff.
Oh, my God.
Back
yeah,
that, and
yeah,
that was the 90s. Yeah. But good to see you, man.
It's great to see you, man.
Yeah.
It's really fun to be here. Look what we've done now that we're all grown up.
We're all grown up.
No, I totally remember being out covering the Board of Ed when they would have, this was after strikes, but in the early 90s, they were locked out a couple of times because the Board of Ed ran out of money. This is in, you know, the before Daley took over the school board, when there was still this weird sort of Board of Education that had like 25 members from, you know, it was kind of the post Harold Washington changes up at the Board of Education.
And it seems, you know, because it almost feels like when you're talking about the strike stuff, and we want to talk about airlines tonight, but when you're talking about this stuff, that you need to know this history. I mean, you forget about what. There has been labor strife in Chicago and the Board of Ed and CTU for a long time.
Yeah, you know, in fact, I mean, you have to remember the Board of Ed was running out of money and locked the doors of the schools. You know, people think of it as a strike, but it was actually like they had a contract that they could not meet the terms of. They could not pay the teachers the raises that were built into the contract. So they had to shut the school down, go to the courts, try to get money out of Springfield, and try to get the union to take actually less. And I can't remember the exact figures, but it was something like, you know, okay, I know the contract calls for a nice raise, 3%, 4%, 5%. So it was actually, I think, pretty big. We want you to take zero, and not just this year, but next year, the year.
Well,
after.
It gives you a little bit of insight of when they talk about these promises. Well, you know, we can't put in the contract, but we promise you.
Right.
You see why there's some distrust there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, right.
Because they've been told these things. And, you know, class size and some of the things that they're fighting over now. And I should, you know, in all fairness, acknowledge that my wife is a veteran Chicago public school teacher. You know, things like class size, they said 28 is the max, but it's actually not.
It's way more than that.
Don't have to live to that. And class sizes, even in kindergartens, can be as many as 30, 33 kids. In the upper grades, they're upwards of 35, 38, you know, 40 sometimes. It's just, you know, so they want some of this stuff in writing, and, you know, the Board of Ed, you know, doesn't have a lot of extra. They have more money now, but it's still not enough.
I love that you're here and we're talking about education.
Yeah,
right? We want to talk about airline. You've really carved out a niche for you to talk about aviation and NPR, because you hear and you'll see your work, because there's so many stories from Boeing and what's happening with the MAX. But this week, what a story that the tariffs that we thought were just kind of, oh, here comes the European Union and the United States of America. But this has a significant impact on the airline industry.
Well, let's speak of historical. This has been brewing for decades. This is, you know, I believe the U.S. first went to the WTO with a complaint about the European nations subsidizing Airbus to help them build planes to better compete with Boeing. Since 2004. I mean, this complaint has been before the World Trade Organization. So now the Trade Organization said, okay, you know what? Americans, you're right. You know, they've been unfairly subsidizing Airbus.
Right.
So you can impose this amount of tariffs. But, you know, the Europeans have the same complaint against Boeing and the U.S. and saying that there's some support there that goes to Boeing that helps them compete. So eventually, I think the WTO will probably say, yep, Europe, you can impose some.
So they're going to go tit for tat on this stuff.
And
who loses?
Everybody. I mean, everybody who flies, because the price of airplanes is and the parts to build these airplanes is going to get significantly higher. So, you know, Airbus has a big plant, and I think in Alabama, where they make planes to feed the U.S. market. But now the parts that they're using for those planes are, even though those planes are built in the U.S. and the final product won't be subject to the tariffs, so many of the parts will be, and that's going to drive up the cost of the plane. And the airlines are going to have to pass that on to the customer.
And we saw the stock market respond to that yesterday with the tariffs. And that's why all of the airline industry, Delta and United, American, they all went down in their stock price, because people recognize, or investors recognize, this is going to be passed on to the consumer.
And this is going to potentially hurt the bottom line for the airlines. They won't be quite as profitable. But it could also, as the prices rise, it could make people think twice about buying airline tickets and flying. And we're already seeing a little bit of a dip in demand. I mean, it's been record demand for air travel right now. The airports, if you've been flying, if you've gone through an airport, if you've sat on a plane, you know there's no extra room because so many people want to fly. But, you know, the thing is that the airlines have been riding this wave for a few years now of high demand and high profits, and that's going to start cooling off. There's already a slowdown in demand just because the economy is cooling off.
And what do they do when there's a slowdown in demand? Do they take planes out of rotation? Do they make flights less? I mean, frequent?
They'll cut the number of flights and the number of routes if demand is slacking that much. It doesn't make sense to fly a plane that's half full, which the airlines used to do all the time.
That was a favorite thing, right? Right.
There was so much excess capacity in the industry. After 9/11, that changed significantly because all of a sudden nobody was flying, and the airlines really had to get their costs under control. But it doesn't make sense to have, you know, if you're United Airlines, and I don't know the number, but I'm guessing they may have, you know, probably just to the New York market alone, the two or three airports they service there, 30 flights a day, 40 flights a day. Do we really need that many? Do we cut back to, you know, a few there? Maybe, you know, some of the smaller markets that they serve in the Midwest.
Won't get as many, right, or any?
You know, we'll have two flights a day to Duluth instead of three. Des Moines or wherever. If the demand isn't there, they'll shrink the capacity to meet the demand.
The airline industry as a whole, we've seen in the last couple of years, they've kind of changed their price system a little bit, where now it's a little bit more of a base price, and then they're adding for bags and for seats and that kind of thing. All of that, almost in a way, and I don't mean to seem so glib or negative, but almost to trick the consumer in the idea that, you know, oh, this is a cheaper flight, but it's not really a cheaper flight once you add all those things together. Does the airline, do you see a future where they're going to do more of that kind of stuff, or we're going to see that's the way they're going to get their money by trying to really kind of wring it out of consumers?
I think that they're going to try to figure out how to get every extra nickel and every extra dime out of every little piece of space and piece of real estate on a plane that they can. So if you're checking a bag, you're paying for that, unless you're at a certain status level or you have their credit card, or, you know, there's little things and you know, they'll throw you a bone here and there if you play their game and you get into their loyalty program or something like that. Maybe you'll get a free checked bag. But, you know, I mean, some of the things that they're doing now, first they introduced this basic economy fare, a lot of the airlines did, which is like stripped down. Listen, you don't get an assigned seat. You can't check a bag. You'll have to pay for that like everybody else. But you also can't bring a bag to go in the overhead bin. It's got to be small and fit under your seat. And if you want that, that's going to cost you more. If you want an assigned seat, that's going to cost you more. Now they're not even doing just that. They're starting to price the seats on the aisle and closer. The space isn't any bigger. The seats aren't any bigger. You're in the same tiny cramped space, but you're 10 rows from the back instead of in the last row.
Come on.
So and you're on the aisle. Yeah. So that they're going to, I mean, sometimes $29, $39, $49 just to be there. And then if you want the economy plus or whatever they're calling it, you know, where you get a little bit more more leg room too. Well, that's going to be $79, $89 depending on the route. I think that they're just, and what the airlines will tell you, and there's a lot of industry analysts who say this too. Listen, the consumers want this because so many people just want the cheapest fare. They just want to sit down. They don't really care. They want a cheap flight so they can go right wherever they need to go. More often than not, it's the leisure traveler. It's like, you know, I want to go to California for a long weekend, but I don't want to spend $500, $600 round trip. Well, you know, you can get that fare for $3 or $350 if you're willing to just take a backpack, stuff it under the seat in front of you, yeah, and sit in a crammed space in the way back of the plane, and maybe not be sitting next to your spouse or your significant other. They're going to be in another part of the plane.
We were talking about it this week on the Steve Cochran Show. An airline out of Japan that the baby. It's the idea that you can check in and it'll tell you where a baby is sitting. So the idea,
there's an idea out there to try to, I think it started in Japan, to kind of so you can avoid, or at least let you know, hey, there's going to be a screaming baby.
Now it's going to be the next iteration will be like, it's going to be $29 more.
Yeah, right. Well, how about a whiny middle-aged man, you know, like me, like, ugh, come on.
They're going to have all of your profile of where you're sitting. David Schaefer's here. He works for the Chicago Bureau for NPR, and he covers aviation. We're talking about the airline industry tonight on Extension 720. We'll take a quick break. Come back, continue. 312-981-7200 is number if you want to chime in. Stay with us. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. David Schaefer is here, continuing our conversation about the airline industry. David covers the aviation industry for NPR, and he's here, and we work together at WBEZ. And you were covering politics and City Hall, and like I said, I've really carved out a niche on covering the airline industry. Do you like it? Do you like covering what happens in air travel? Because it can be anything from how expensive a ticket is to an accident to anything.
It's wild. It's so wide and varied. My beat is actually transportation, so I cover roads and trains and infrastructure and all these things and those debates as they go on in Congress. Right. I haven't had much time to do anything but airlines.
When they have that tarmac story at O'Hare where the thing went out, does NPR call you and be like, we need something, we need 30 seconds?
I actually thought that was a joke the first time I saw it, then people are tweeting it, and the president retweeted it, and I'm like, oh my God, that was actually a real thing. I thought it was... joke when I first saw it. That's not a story that we're going to do something in depth on, but it did get mentioned a couple of times, and certainly on the web we played with it. But the tragic accident of that B-17 bomber, I think it was, in Connecticut yesterday, took up a lot of my time. Any development on this Boeing story and the 737 MAX?
Where are we on that story? Because this is one just a couple months ago, you're like, this feels like this could have a real impact on Boeing.
Well, it is having a real impact on Boeing. It's going to have a real impact, I think, on air travelers, because you know the 737 MAX, just you know, to understand how big of a deal this is. This was a plane that airlines had ordered close to 5,000 of them.
Wow.
So there's 4,400 of them on back order. The airlines are planning on, I think United had 14 of them in service at the time of the grounding out of their fleet of hundreds or thousands of planes. That doesn't, taking 14 out of service doesn't mean a lot. But at the same time, they were planning this year of adding, 20, 30, 40 more planes this year alone. Now they can't do that. Now they have to wait until the situation is resolved. Southwest is an airline that flies only Boeing 737 planes, and they were going to be going to the MAX because it's the latest in terms of technology. It's way more fuel efficient than the current versions of the 737 that they fly. They were going to have a ton of them in their fleet.
What does Boeing have to do to say the problems that happened before are not there anymore, we fixed all this stuff, and have everything be okay?
Well, they have to convince the regulators, the FAA for one, but the regulators all around the country, because now everybody around the world, not around the country, but around the world, they're saying, hold on a second, how did this plane get approved to fly in the first place? How did it get certified? Well, everybody kind of trusted the FAA that they were doing their job. Now we're hearing a story today coming out of Seattle that the FAA actually relaxed some of its safety standards at Boeing's urging. Like, Boeing was saying, and it's really, one of the things was how many alerts would be going off in the cockpit. And Boeing was saying, we don't need to have all these alerts, and we don't have to have all these things telling pilots it's, you know, something's going wrong, because nothing's going to go wrong. And Boeing said, yeah, you know, with this new system, this flight control system called MCAS, yeah, maybe we don't need all these alerts for it. So therefore, in the certification process, they agreed to relax some of the safety standards that had been in place for other things.
And I would assume that that's going to put a lot of pressure on the FAA to really make sure, because they can't have on their hands to put these back in the air and have another accident, another crash that would be in the... They can't. Absolutely. I mean, that would be the end of Boeing and be the end of...
It's Boeing's reputation, and Boeing knows this. I mean, Boeing, you know, say what you will about corporate greed and corporate America, but they don't want planes to fall out of the sky. They don't... I mean, they destroys the business model, for one, but certainly they don't want to be, you know, responsible for you know, tragedy such as this. But at the same time, I mean, there's a serious lack of trust with not just regulators, but people who fly on the planes. Passengers are already saying, you know what, I don't want to go on that plane again, no matter what you do to fix it. It's going to take some time for Boeing and the FAA to regain the trust of the flying public, and the FAA to regain the trust of the regulators around the world. We're here in Canada, in Europe, in India, in China. They all want to do their own testing of this plane with the new software package that will fix the problem and address the problem that appears to have led to these two tragic plane crashes in Ethiopia and Indonesia.
The local, you know, close to home, we talk about the airports, O'Hare and Midway. There was a new customer satisfaction poll that came out last week, and that's when you and I started talking just about how both of the airports ranked super low in the bottom percentile of customer satisfaction when it comes to airports, and that's not good, you know, obviously for both airports, but I mean, Does that surprise you? I mean, O'Hare gets a bad rap, but it seems when I go to other airports in the country, I don't necessarily think that what happens at O'Hare is any worse than, say, LaGuardia or other places like that.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned LaGuardia, because it's one of the airports ranked much lower.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense to me. That makes sense.
than both O'Hare and Midway, but yeah, I mean, just looking at the for what they call mega airports, which are the biggest airports around the country, at the bottom of the list is Newark, Liberty Airport, and LAX is just above that, and then O'Hare. So we're at least above.
Is that
our biggest rivals?
You got LA so much volume York, coming but, through there, and so much that's happening, and obviously the modernization that's happening as well. Is it just a foregone conclusion that customers are going to go, oh, that's not a good airport? You know what I mean?
Well, like, you know, I mean, sometimes. It, you know, passengers can get rankled by anything. But, you know, I go to a fair number of airports around the country, and there is a big difference between some. I haven't been through Midway, actually, in quite a while. But, you know, at O'Hare, it's often the case where if you're not there super early before your flight takes off, you're not going to find any room around the gate to sit down, be able to both charge your phone, open up your laptop, do some work maybe, and have a cold pop or a cup of coffee. I mean, there's just not enough space around the gates anymore. People are standing all over the place. It does depend somewhat on what airline you're going to, but even in the concourses, the restaurants, you know, you're just, because everybody has big carry-ons that they're carrying now and taking with them, and there's nowhere to set your bags down when you're sitting at a table, or if you sit up at the bar. There's just not a ton of space there.
There's a lot of construction at the airports now.
There's construction going on right now. That's one of the big problems that this survey found, is that the airports with big construction problems, because there's growing demand for air travel, there's more passengers going through these airports than ever before. There's just not enough room, so they've got to actually take space out of the equation and try to build their facilities, modernize their facilities. That creates more havoc, the old adage, no pain, no gain. So those airports that are under construction right now are having some of the
biggest. If you pay attention to social media, to Twitter, one airline or one flight is delayed or possibly on the tarmac for too long because they can't find a gate, you would think that it's the worst airport in the world. When you start thinking about those kind of things, carrier issues, when trying to find an open gate, when you're taxiing, things of that nature. Is that on the airport? Is that on the carrier? Well, whose fault is that?
It's a combination of things because, you know, for example, at O'Hare, Terminal 1 is all United. It's all United, so they control most of the facilities in there. The city's Department of Aviation owns the entire airport, but it's United that's really responsible for, A, the layout. I think they are the lessee. They are the ones that lease the space to the Chili's or whatever the restaurant is.
So it's all United. All yeah, okay.
I think that's the case. And so it's a combination of both, you know, the city, the owner or operator of the airport, and the airline to make sure that their gate areas. Now, if you're one of the other carriers in Terminal 2, Terminal 3 is mostly American, so it's a similar situation, but it's certainly a little more dated than the United Terminal. You know, the middle terminal is the one that they're going to rehab and take out of commission for a while. That's, you know, they've got a big project there. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of different airlines there, so the airlines aren't as responsible for the.
I want to bring David Jennings in. I was doing the news. Yeah. Has a question for you, David.
Sure. How many years behind are most of the airports in this country in terms of catching up to late 20th century infrastructure?
Well, a lot of them are significantly behind. I mean, you could just look at the airports and the post-September 11th security checkpoints that we have. There's hardly any. I can't think of an airport that was built. Maybe there's a couple around the country, but I'm sure there's a few. But, you know, they had to add that infrastructure just for security,
right,
to an airport that was already laid out, already designed, and just we had like little metal detectors that I think people went through. You know, the whole TSA experience is something that's new in the last. I mean, it is 20 years now though, and so, you know, shouldn't we have, right, a better system by now? Shouldn't we have a better way of? But, you know, runways. You know, how long have the runways at O'Hare been under construction for reconfiguration? You know, there's still places I go where it's like to find a place to charge a laptop.
It's a big deal now.
A phone is like,
it shouldn't be a premium at this point. Yeah, this should be at every seat, every which way. Yeah. You know, as you look at the future, do you think that when it comes to the modernization of O'Hare or Midway or any airport, are you going to see it like stadiums where cities are going to say it's time to invest and maybe tear it down and start again?
It depends on the kind of space that they have. You know, Denver is probably the most recent one that built an entirely new airport. They did it way outside of the city.
Yeah, one road in, one road out.
My sister actually works there in their environmental department, and has a crazy commute to get all the way out to the airport there.
But it's terrible.
You know, if they have the space to do something like that and build a brand new airport to meet the present demand, great. But, you know, where would you do that in Chicago? I mean, there's always that talk of Piatone, but the city's never going to give up on O'Hare or Midway. Those are always going to be their economic engines for the region. So they're not going to do something like that. Shut it down. Let's build a new airport, shiny and new, somewhere else. The thing about stadiums, though, that you will start seeing is I think we're going to see a lot more private funding coming in, public-private partnerships to build airports.
Interesting.
They've been toying with this possibility in a lot of cities. It's done all over the world except for here in the U.S. So we're going to maybe
the Ken Griffin Airport.
The Ken Griffin.
There you go. David Shaper covers aviation and transportation for NPR in the Chicago Bureau. Great to see you, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no, it's been fun.